Hey everyone, you know the deal. Please remember to hit the like, subscribe, share, download, listen, and whatever other button there is, and leave us a review wherever you do listen. This ensures that we can continue bringing you the great conversations with the amazing guests like the one we have today. So let's get to the show. On this episode, we have one of Henzo Gracie's first American students and a Henzo black belt since 2006, Carl Pravik. On this episode, Carl discusses his YouTube live sessions, training for the older jiu-jitsu practitioner, injury recovery, the importance of flow rolling for anyone who trains no matter their age, and how to structure your training for longevity and maximum gains. Here is The Roll Radio with the author of Fluid BJJ and owner and head instructor at Silver Fox BJJ, fourth degree black belt, Carl the Silver Fox Pravik.
Welcome to Roll Radio.
And we're live. Gary, how are you doing?
I am fantastic as always.
Happy Wednesday,
even though you always say I am grumpy or...
No, you are happier than normal.
I am, because I'm looking forward to today. But before we get to the guest, therollradio.com, the Fuji Gi giveaway. Drop a question for the guest. We pick those at random. Today's is actually very apropos. And once we get those, we put those into a pool. We pick from that once a month. The first episode of every month, we give away a Fuji Gi of your choosing. So it really, very small pool of people to pick for that Gi. So your chances of winning are very high. So that's therollradio.com. Drop us a question.
Sounds good. Yeah, take advantage of it. Those entries are flowing in at this point. Mm-hmm. So we have a lot of to choose from. Yep. But don't miss out on the opportunity. The guys from Fuji really hook us up, and you know, there's many happy gi owners.
Yes. There's about 9 or 10 now, and they're very happy. It's quality stuff. So check it out.
Yeah, good for them. Good for them. All right, let's get to the conversation. The one and only the Silver Fox in the house. How are you, sir?
Good. How you guys doing?
We're good.
We were just talking right before we started that it's been a while since you and I had a conversation. Last time we did this is a little bit less formal setting. We did it on Instagram, I believe, right? Is that what it was?
Probably. Yeah, I think about right. Yeah.
I think it was on Instagram and we did one of those live things and yeah, I was experimenting with stuff quite a bit. But how you've been since then?
Been okay. You know, I resumed my sort of traveling schedule this summer, so that was good. I did get vaccinated to be able to do that, but somehow I still wind up with this thing. So I'm actually feeling pretty good, but it's still testing positive. So I got to hopefully kick this thing because I'm ready. I'm supposed to be flying to Holland in about 2 weeks. So looking forward to that.
Yeah, you've been traveling quite a bit. I mean, not only now, but just in general. You visit Europe quite extensively, quite frequently. What brings you? What brought you to the point of such extensive travel?
You know, it's kind of interesting. I do enjoy traveling and experiencing new countries and history and so forth. I think sort of I'm almost feeling like I'm on an evangelical mission for jiu-jitsu. I think. You know, some parts of Europe are quite advanced as far as jiu-jitsu goes, but there are parts that are still sort of only now getting access to high quality sort of jiu-jitsu instruction. So I wanted to do my part and help sort of spread jiu-jitsu and technical aspects of jiu-jitsu. I mean, there's a lot of different games out there, and I'm a strong believer in technical jiu-jitsu sort of. There's always the strength and physicality and athleticism and talent and all that stuff. But I do believe in technique. And I think that's something that you can keep going with for a long time. So I wanted to make my contribution. And, you know, I think people have reacted positively and, you know, they keep asking me back. So I keep going back.
Well, good for you. And speaking of contribution, you've been doing those Friday live sessions on YouTube for a while now.
And
that's actually, it's quite successful, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. You know, I do enjoy it. I don't know if you've ever, if you haven't seen it, take a look, because I hope the fact that me and Enrique and Mike enjoy this comes through. It was kind of weird. You know, this was actually sort of an extension of what I was talking about before. You know, I've been getting a lot of questions from, you know, on Facebook and Messenger from people. And I remember a friend of mine and I are driving from Germany to Holland on a highway, and I'm talking to a guy in India, and he's asking me technical questions about, you know, specific moves and things. He was, I think they had an ADCC style tournament there. And we just, the call just kept getting dropped. So I was kind of frustrated. So I said, you know, let's do like a troubleshooting session, you know, which is actually a passion of mine. At the end of the day, I think jiu-jitsu is basically a problem solving thing. And that's one of the reasons why I think I love it so much. And so I said, you know, well, let's do this sort of, you know, once a month. And we picked a time for every Friday. It was first Friday of every month, 10:30 a.m. Eastern Standard Time or Eastern Daylight Time. I don't know which one of those times, basically 10:30 a.m. East Coast USA. I think it works in Europe. It's 4:30 on a Friday. You know, in Far East, it's usually the evening, so they're not. It's not too late. It kind of works for all time zones, and if you can't watch it, it stays on. You know, so you can watch it when it's not live. But if you watch it when it's live, you actually get to ask questions, and we troubleshoot them live. And then during the lockdown, we went from monthly to daily. And that was kind of, we did 99 straight days. I cut it off at 99 days because this was on a Saturday. And I think we were going to reopen a few days later. I went to cut it off at 99 days because I think people that have OCD would drive them crazy, like myself, rather than hit that 100, because I want to have unfinished business. I want to have unfinished business. And, then I went to Massachusetts. I actually broke 2 days later. I literally could not move 2 days later. Somehow we made it through 99 episodes and I couldn't move. My back seized up. And then a few days later, we drove up to Massachusetts, filmed my first Fanatics instructional. And since then we've gone, I thought a daily was too much and maybe monthly was not enough. So we've gone to weekly. So now we do weekly. Last week is actually the first one we skipped since we gone weekly. And the reason for that is because I tested positive, Enrique tested positive about a week before me. And we just didn't feel it safe to you know, try to get together and do it. So I don't know. I just tested positive still yesterday. So I have high hopes that I can do this Friday's one. But we'll see tomorrow. I'm going to get tested again. So hopefully... keep our fingers crossed.
Well, first of all, safe and quick recovery, because that, you know, this whole, and we're not going to get into the political conversation, but it just stinks, right? Every time, you know, that kind of engagement takes place within the academy and kind of ruins a lot of dynamics. Let's just leave it at that. Whether we like it, don't like it, that doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
But for those who have not seen your YouTube sessions, explain very quickly, what does it look like? What do you guys do over there? How do you get the questions, right? Because that's what I love about this. You guys really, there's a high engagement of troubleshooting that yeah. takes place. And some of them are actually funny. Like you get.
Yeah. We tried to have fun. I think there's like literally, we literally had audience globally, and we still do, literally every single continent except for Antarctica was represented and is still represented, you know, Latin America, North America, Europe, we're pretty big, Africa, Asia, you know, Australia. So we usually start off with a question that we received, and then we let the live questions take precedence. So there's a lot of questions. Sometimes we don't get to answer all of them, guys. Just to make a bit of advice, Mike is the one that reads the questions. So if you're nice, he'll probably. But sometimes guys start to get ticked off, and you know, hey, Mike, wait to answer my question. So we actually have it's about 20 minutes to half an hour. You know, unpredictable things sometimes happen. We just let things happen naturally. You know. It sort of mimics my jiu-jitsu game. I'm, you know, if I'm demonstrating something and the guy is hell bent on not giving me that submission. He's giving me something else. I'll switch into something else. And that's how we do things. And you know, when we have a question and, you know, if as we go through the problem, hopefully the person that's asking the question gets their question answered. If not, there's a chance because it's live to have them go deeper and we can go deeper on answering that question as well. So it's a lot of fun. You know, episode 19, I think I accidentally put Enrique out. You know, he didn't tap and
I did see that. Yeah,
I missed that one. I've watched a few. I got to go back.
It's close to the end of episode 19.
I'm going to check it out. I do. You know, I watched one recently and it was about flow rolling. And, yeah. You know, we're going to talk a lot about, you know, jiu-jitsu for the older demographic. But I think that flow rolling is important not only for us, but for the younger guys. And they kind of don't get into it. They don't see the value in it. They want to go hard all the time or at a fast pace, not necessarily hard. And I was hoping that maybe you could touch on flow rolling a little bit and why it's important for everybody.
Yeah, I think, you know, if we let's bring jiu-jitsu into sort of instruction, drilling and live rolling where we test out our technique. And then, you know, obviously tournaments is like elevated live rolling. You can have, I've had live rolling sessions with guys that approach tournament intensity and speed and everything else. I think there's a piece missing because you're going from, you know, in most classes, you know, the instructor demonstrates the move. You might get a chance to rep it maybe say 20 times each at maybe 10 times each side and then kind of maybe tweak it a little bit and then you move on to the next move. That's not enough for that technique to become part of your game. And a lot of times when you just go from drilling to live rolling, you don't have a chance because you don't have a confidence enough in that move. Or, you know, it's not at the forefront of your brain and your body to try it. And I think that's where flow rolling kind of comes in. It's the bridge between sort of learning the move, drilling it, flow rolling, and trying it in live rolling. I think it's got a bad, you know, and some guys, and I think it's undeserved. If you really look at some of the top level guys in the world, they do flow roll. They do experiment with things. They do flow roll because flow rolling is not flopping around like a dead fish. Flow roll is basically moving around in an unpredictable, somewhat unpredictable pattern, like you would normally have in a combat sport like jiu-jitsu. I hate to refer to jiu-jitsu as a sport. I personally prefer to refer to it as an art. That, you know, things kind of change somehow, but it's lower pace and lower intensity. So yes, submissions are allowed. Guys, if you flow roll, sometimes you're like, well, you're not allowed to. Yes, you are. You want to be precise. You want to have a good timing, maybe, you know, slower pace and lower intensity, but everything else should be present. And if the guy reacts in an unpredictable way, this gives you a chance to sort of play around with some follow-ups or tweaking your technique. And actually in flow rolling also, what I like to do is a lot of times when I catch one of the guys, I actually sort of pause and see if I just maybe say an arm bar, I remove the grip. I just keep him in position with my legs. Is that enough? If the answer is yes, this move is good. I give him a chance to now move along into the next stage, like almost like catch and release, which gives you a chance to sort of lighten up on the submission and have them flow into the next position, which again encourages people to keep attacking in combination and see what the next logical step in that sequence would be. So I think it's a highly underrated tool for training, and I think it should be included in a lot of people's games. I think for me, drilling is underrated. For me, it tends to be a little bit boring, but I have to do it. Flow rolling is a lot of fun, and live rolling is a lot of fun. So it's the part that the drilling, it's sort of that interim thing in between that I think would help a lot of people sort of, I think it becomes a little bit more higher level stuff, meaning that, you know, it's hard when you're a white belt to flow roll because you don't have enough in your toolbox.
So hold on a second. So are you saying that I cannot go like 120% and just smash everybody on the way? And it
why not? Yeah. I think, you know, there is time for that. I personally like to go. I've had a bad back since I was a kid, but it's been flared up last 3 months. So normally, under normal circumstances, when that my back is just normally effed up, especially effed up, I will try to have 2 or 3 hard rolling sessions in a week. That's about it. The rest is going to be mostly comprised of drilling, flow rolling, experimenting, and sort of trying to just get my game better. At the end of the day, my aim is to continually improve my game, and I think it's a big tool.
So somebody told me a while back, and I'm curious what your thoughts on this, that often we go fast and hard because we're trying to substitute that minimal or lack of technique that we the techniques that we are missing. So we compensate with our power, speed, the things that come naturally to us, especially in our younger age. And flow rolling, what flow rolling allows us to do is take the component of speed and power away from ourselves and really refocus, on more technical and more predictable approach to the concepts or whatever we are working on at that point. And really, we are intentionally putting ourselves in a disadvantage of not having the power and speed, but yet we are working on what's more important, which is the fluidity and opportunity, seeing those opportunities, and then execution, the really smooth execution of the techniques.
Yeah, absolutely. When I first started, I don't like to write. I actually dislike to write, but I wrote a book. I didn't, maybe book is not, it's more of a pamphlet. I kind of did it along the lines of what I saw, Bruce Lee had put out, years ago. It was just kind of, for me, easy to read. I would sort of thumb through it. It was easy to carry. And the reason I did it is people were telling me, you should write a book. And I'm like, I hate writing. And then I really got tired. The reason I did it, I got tired of guy that's, he's turning 32 and he's thinking about hanging it up. And I'm thinking, man, you're 32 years old. You're clearly doing something wrong. It's not that jiu-jitsu is wrong. It's just maybe the way you train is wrong. And, it's a very simple, people have been training for a while, and it still amazes me. Sometimes you will find guys that have been training for a while and, they're kind of like, flow rolling, where they're sort of like, that's not how real men do it. Well, I can pretty much guarantee you that if you take a guy that goes balls to the wall, let's take a mid 35 year old guy, which is not an old guy, which is, somewhere in between. By the way, I like to think of ourselves as middle-aged, not old, but anyways, a 35 year old guy probably still has quite a bit of strength, decent wind. If he's athletic and, he can go balls to the wall, and chances are he'll be able to do that 3 times a week. And then the next day he can barely move and he will take 2 days off and then he'll go balls to the wall and trains 3 times a week. Now, if he does this for 3 years and you take a guy with equal sort of, athleticism, equal sort of strength and size and everything else equal, and that guy trains 6 days a week. But on those days that he can barely move, he does something different. He drills, he flow rolls, he tries to troubleshoot. I can guarantee you that guy in 3 years will have a way better game, multiple better game than the guy that trains 3 times a week. Now, in the first year, it may not be quite that evident because you might have that guy that trains 3 times a week. If you hit him, if he trains hard on a day that he's, obviously fresh from 2 days of rest, and he would go with the other guy who's just banged up and barely moving, chances are he's going to get the better of the guy that trains 6 days a week that day. doesn't mean that his game is better. It just means that that day he was in a better physical shape to have a battle, so to speak. Well, guess what? In 3 years, I don't care. Even if the guy's banged up, he will get the better of the other guy because he just has so much more mat time, so much more technique under his belt that, you know, I just don't understand why people would not consider that a possibility and play around with it. And, you know, if you do this right, and I've done it, you know, 20 years ago, I did it wrong where you flop around like a, you know, like a wet noodle. That's not flow rolling.
Well, so why do you think that happens? I mean, why is it so appealing, especially to the younger generation? And I don't mean to categorize people are going to be pissed off now and everything. And but I mean, listen, we do deal with age. We do deal with different body styles. You know, we do deal with people from different professions. I mean, we didn't even touch that part, right? There's just individuals who don't have enough time to train six times a week. They need to create efficient training schedule where they can maximize what they are getting back from jiu-jitsu and from their training, right? So why do you think it's so appealing?
Well, to be honest with you, I don't think it's a function of age because I've, you know, like, okay. You know, when you look at guys, you know, young guys like Gary Tonin, for me, he's one of the sort of, epitomes of what jiu-jitsu stands for, like a really, you know, amazing game, you know, world-class competitor. And, you know, he would do it and he's a pretty young guy. I think it's more a question of mentality. I think it's, you know, people sometimes look at it as like, you know, it's sort of like weightlifting. It's not weightlifting. It's knowledge acquisition. The more you in it, the more knowledge you will acquire. And any tool that helps you keep stay in it more time every week is useful. So I think it's more of a mentality than I think some, the guys that have that mentality, I don't think they quite understand what the long game is. And the long game is knowledge acquisition.
And I think you nailed it. Knowledge acquisition. It's not necessarily, well, I'm curious again, what you think about this, but is it always the time on the mat per se, or is it the actual educational part, right? Because now we can get into a conversation of, we can continue educating ourselves even off the mat, right? Even listening to this conversation, yeah. Right? It's nobody's going to be listening with headphones while they're rolling, right? You're on your way to the academy and you could be listening to this conversation and you're actually stimulating yourself how to train smart. So this is all part of this huge umbrella of training and knowledge acquisition. Would you agree with that?
I agree 100%.
And then we can dip into things like, you know, videos, whether subscription or non-subscription, yeah. YouTube, you know, watching your Rolling with Fox. And I mean, this could be several dozens of different areas and avenues that how you can dip into the jiu-jitsu is not only showing up and smashing your partner for 7 or 10 minutes, you know, several rounds, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, again, if you sort of slice it up, what are the, you know, it's partially a function of the personality of, you know, certain people can literally just put in an audio tape and listen about jiu-jitsu and learn from that. And other people need to feel it. Other people need to see it. But I think all of those can help. I've seen, you know, when we did the Daily Edition, you know, at that time, US was locked down and some countries were opening up earlier than we were. And I was literally getting messages from Japan, from Korea, from Europe, that guys have been watching, you know, Roll with the Fox for 2 months straight and nothing else because they couldn't train. Now they reopen and their, you know, their teammates accuse them of training secretly because they visually absorb certain things. You know, I've seen guys that blew out their ACL, you know, and all they could do is just watch class and watch videos. And come back and you know their game was way better than it was when they left. So yes, you know, visual, audio, all those learning types are helpful. I think the biggest thing for people that if you really want to maximize your learning abilities, I think is you need to figure out what to study.
Right.
And I think that's, you know, it's easier as you progress through the ranks, because at that point you start to see where your weaknesses are, who gives you trouble, what type of games, what type of moves you're having trouble with, what type of techniques that you're using that your training partners are countering. So I think that becomes easier. It becomes a little harder at the beginning, and, you know, white and blue belt, you know, especially at white belt, you just got to believe in your teacher and in the process, and just kind of try to learn the basics, and just kind of keep cobbling enough knowledge every time you go train, and maybe listen to things, and just have an open-minded approach to learning. And hopefully once things start to fall in place, then you can start to be a little bit more concrete as to which areas of your game you focus on the most.
Yeah. And you mentioning something important, right? Trusting the instructor, and especially in the very beginning, because there is let's be honest, there's a large amount of confusion. There's a lot of unknown.
Yes.
Most of the time, there's more questions than answers. And then it seems like we don't have enough time in a day to really address this big thing. And we want to learn everything right now and all of it, right? So it all kind of puts us in this, you know, not so successful environment. So trusting the environment that you find yourself in is really, really important. It's kind of, in a way, I like to think about it, you kind of giving it up, letting it go, and without much of a resistance, sponging it for first, you know, several months, if not years, until you start developing. And a lot of people call this different ways, different, you know, style, you know, you develop your system, you know, you have these different anchor points where you can start focusing on. And that's where, you know, you start doing your own homework. You start exploring it on your own, right? But let's go back to that white belt. Let's go back to that brand new individual. So I think it's extremely difficult to step into Jiu-Jitsu Academy for first time.
Yeah.
You know, it's a, no matter how friendly it is, it is a physical contact sport. It is what it is, right? There will be somebody on top of you. If you watch videos, if you listen to podcasts, you already know there's a physical contact, right? There's an intimidator factor, which I'm going to be the only one who doesn't know anything, right? And all these things create anxiety point. And I think that is emphasized as older we get, because we have these concerns. I don't want to get hurt. You know, I don't want to be in these positions. The younger guys are going to smash me. What are your thoughts on all of this? Like, how should, you know, an individual who is, you know, a little bit, you know, deeper, maybe, you know, middle age, you know, one of us, you know, how should we start the jiu-jitsu? I'm not the 20-year-old buck, and I don't mean to offend any 20-year-olds right now, but let's be honest, it is. It's just, you know, once you bridge that 40, 45, 50, you know, things don't operate the same way. Our bodies don't move in the same directions.
If you guys can remind me, I do want to come back to one point, like when you start to develop your own game and so forth. I want to make a point on that. Because I want people to not to forget that.
Okay.
Once you forget, you know, once you start to focus on sort of your go-to moves and making them better, you should not forget about other things. But let's talk about this. This is a very, very important point. I think first of all, you need to make sure that you're in an academy where, and I do not refer to my school as a gym. I never refer to it as a gym. I always refer to it as a school, as an academy. I view it as a place of learning. And that's sort of the one thing that you need to make sure that you understand. You're there to learn. It's sort of like, you know, learning a new language. It's, you know, you're going to, guess what? Everybody started in the same position, you know, not knowing anything. So you need to go to a place where, you know, white belt's not sort of like, okay, yeah, well, here, go do, you know, go just throw them in and start rolling and see what you can do. Well, you don't know anything, so how are you going to be able to do anything? You're basically just fighting for your life to some extent in your mind. So I don't believe in that. And then, you know, it was a learning experience for me as well. I think you need to make sure that it's a place where people help each other learn, not just the instructor, but also the other students. especially if you're sort of what's called middle-aged, you know, you have concerns. I think when people start to view it as a combat, as I win, I lose, that's when things start to kind of really start to go south, meaning that it becomes a very frustrating journey. I think the way to look at things is every time you come to class, it was a good class if you learn one or two things, or you did one or two things a little bit better. If you have that approach, it becomes a much more productive process rather than, oh, crap, I got the shit beat out of me again. That's not what this should be about. This should be about learning a technique. You know, eventually, if you want to test yourself in tournaments and fights, you know, going hard with guys, that's, there'll be time for that. But people should try to focus on you know, having good training partners. And the it's instructor's responsibility to help make that attainable too. Don't just leave people on their own because, you know, usually a new guy, you know, sometimes he doesn't get picked. Just, you know, also it's, I think it's good, especially for older guys, guys that are sort of older than sort of the 40s or whatever. Sometimes, you know, they tend to move a little stiff and become a little more rigid. And it's, you know, sometimes people take offense that the guy's trying to almost like thwart them. And that's not the case. Just their body doesn't move, especially when they're starting this as a new endeavor. Their body doesn't move in the way that they want it to move. And they may accidentally elbow the guy. So it's important, I think, to have, I'm a fan of not a lot of times putting two rigid guys together. It's sort of, in my mind, it's counterproductive, even though it may, on the surface, may make sense. I think you're better off giving them a sort of a sturdy younger blue belt, you know, that's, when I say younger blue belt, somebody that's probably been around, kind of understands what jiu-jitsu is about, where he knows that if the guy accidentally hit him with his elbow, it's not intentionally, it's just, and that he can, you know, he's not going to break right away, and but also help this guy kind of navigate the process. I think what's happening in jiu-jitsu world over the last 5 to 10 years is there's a lot of exciting developments. I think the video learning has become a bigger part of the learning process. I don't think it'll ever replace in-person learning because, you know, I can literally feel somebody's thing and just tweak it, and it's, this is how you do it. But it's better than nothing. Some, you know, some parts of the country or of the world had nothing, you know, 10 years ago. You know, a lot of times, a lot of places you might have just, and I don't mean that in an insulting way, a blue belt teaching classes. So it's a really, really good tool. And I think also the process, how you approach learning has been given a lot more thought over the last 5 to 10, 12 years. And I think that's positive. And I think jiu-jitsu is growing, that just technology level is growing constantly and at a more rapid clip than it did. I think it's grown more in the last 10 years, especially in the US, than it did in the previous 10 years.
Do you think that video libraries, what you just mentioned right now, and adding that as a additional, we know it won't replace the mat time. We know it won't replace the hands-on, you know, feel and touch, but do you think that that actually can take students to the next level?
Yeah, I think, there's two ways to look at it. I think, for the less experienced people, the relatively new people, maybe the teacher that they have does not sort of connect with the way they learn immediately, like in terms of class time. Doesn't mean that they should quit, but it maybe the video library. I'm a big fan of picking a teacher whose style resonates with you.
Huge.
You can have the smartest, the most amazing teacher. If it doesn't make sense to you, or for whatever reason doesn't connect with the way you learn, it's not going to work well. So the video, I would call it almost supplement, mm-hmm. allows you to pick the teacher whose style works for you. And there's so much free content that you don't have to pay for somebody's content until you say, you know what? I like how this guy teaches. I like what this guy teaches. Let me follow him. Let me learn from him. So I think for the, you know, new white belts and relatively new blue belts, I think it's more of that, maybe kind of figuring out a teacher that helps them make sense of the vast world of jiu-jitsu. For the more advanced practitioners, I think at that point, I think it's important to continue to train other things. That's the point I mentioned earlier, that, you know, you can't just, it's sort of like, you know, if you go to a university, you still should, you know, have at least some, at least basic fundamental knowledge of math. So meaning that, you know, you maybe your guard passing is amazing, but, you know, other, the other parts of your game and top side control is amazing, but other parts of your game are lacking, then you should still be broadening those. And still, that's when I think, you know, it's good to go to class where the teacher decides what's being worked on rather than you do. And, but also it allows the more advanced practitioners sort of bring in things that they might be missing, the finer points, you know, they have this part down, but how does this guy do this when people react in this way? And I think that's a huge tool for me. You know, I remember, you know, 8-10 years ago, I'd be watching world, you know, if I couldn't go in person, you know, matches at the Worlds or ADCC. And then, you know, some of those be like watching paint dry. And I'm hoping for that one little exchange, like literally 2 seconds. And I just hit rewind, because there's maybe something that I was paying attention to that I wanted to sort of tweak for myself, you know?
Yeah.
So I think, yeah, go ahead.
First of all, I do think that we are spoiled in a way. The way how technology is literally in front of our fingertips, we can look anything all the time, constantly, right? When you and I, we were starting, and your journey by far longer than mine, but none of that existed. The Google didn't exist when I started, so there was no such thing as looking things up. But going back to that video library of watching videos, there's one more component that I always find interesting is when it comes to education itself. There's kind of two main parts of it. It is the teacher that relays the information, but there's also the student who has to be able to receive the information.
Yes.
And there's this big gap in the middle, right? It could be, there could be a situation where there's a phenomenal teacher and phenomenal student, and they are just on different waves. And there's component of missed details. There's component of us forgetting. Our brain is so tricky that we walk off the mat and we're just like, there was one thing that I remember he did here, and I can't freaking figure it out what it was. And I think that's the power of the video. That's the rewind button that you talk about. Go home, review it. It's at your fingertips. And literally, sooner you do it, sooner it'll get embedded inside and the next time you're coming back. And in addition to all this, you know, somebody told me this again recently. That said, these videos are like, imagine walking, and I was saying this in my classes, but imagine it walking into pitch dark room, and there is a door on the opposite side of the room, but you cannot see anything. And going into a class in which you don't know what's going to be taught is like walking into that room. You're kind of stumbling, you're finding your way. Sorry. Are you fine? Are you good? Are you choking?
Yeah, I would drink some water to make it better. I think I made it worse. I'm sorry, but no, you're fine. Walking into a dark room.
No, yeah, so you're walking into a dark room, right? And it's kind of like walking into the class without knowing what's going to be taught. You're kind of stumbling, you're going through that class, you're listening, you're kind of finding your way through the room versus having a little light right by the door across the room. And that light doesn't light up the whole room, but it just guides you the direction towards where you need to go. And somebody who was telling me this, videos are kind of like this too. When you watch them ahead of, before the classes, you educate yourself a little bit. See what's coming. You know, you create maybe this moment of less of being lost. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So not only you hands-on, but you already know what's going to happen. So there is the moment of unknown is getting kind of pushed away, and you have a more clear path. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think you make a very, very big point. I think that's a very important point that, this, the teacher is kind of gives the knowledge, but the student needs to be in a frame to be able to receive that knowledge. I wanted to add one other point to that. I think it's also important for people to try to follow a teacher or especially when you rely on video, that whose game you can duplicate or like to duplicate. You know, sometimes people are watching, and I think this is an issue for some of the younger guys, maybe late 20s, early 30s, where, I'm not necessarily saying that, your body type may prevent you from doing certain, to try certain things and you will never be able to do them. But, they're watching endless videos of a guy that's, 5'3", that's super flexible and has a certain game. And, in the meantime, they're 6'3", not the most, flexible person, again, just to maybe if that's your personality, that's your body type, maybe you should be sort of watching Hodger Gracie's game, which has been proven at the highest level of the game, but it's, basically also in MMA, a very fundamental game that's extremely effective,
Yeah. I think that's one of the most underestimated part of learning, finding an instructor, and not only for video. I think this is also for academies.
Yeah,
I think everybody should try jiu-jitsu. We talked about it so many times. Everybody should be trying jiu-jitsu, right? But not every academy is good for that individual, right? First of all, there are different focuses, but per academy, right? More some there are self-defense, there's some competition, there are some, about the art, but the culture and dynamic within the academy that's often set by the instructors, how many of them there are, right? That's what creates. And if that culture doesn't fit, no matter how good they are, you, I don't know if your success is going to be high.
Yeah, I agree with that wholeheartedly. I think, Henzo has a saying, people wind up where they're supposed to wind up. And it's a very good saying, especially I recommend people when they move away or on paper, an academy could look great, but, walk in. Even if you don't know nothing, if you've never trained, you can kind of feel this is a good place or nobody's paying attention to me. Nobody, I just walked in and was hesitant and nobody cares. Well, guess what?
Yeah. And we are humans. I mean, it just like I seek something specific. They might be giving something specific, and if we are not on the same wave, it's just going to be I think difficult.
Yeah. I want real quick about that wavelength and stuff. I've noticed for me, at least very recently, repeating back to my instructor, this guy here, like when we're in privates, we now have an insight onto how we think. Right. And I think very differently than Thomas. But I will say he will show me something and describe it, break it down, and then I'll say something that almost sounds different, but when we think about it for a moment, we're actually saying the same thing. And it's just the way my brain processes information. And I want to just say to the students out there that are listening, talk to your instructor. Don't be embarrassed or ashamed. Don't think you're taking up too much of their time. Wait for the appropriate moments, but definitely talk to them and say, hey, this is what I was thinking about this and that. And maybe you guys can come to some sort of mutual agreement where, okay, you know what? The way I teach can be right for this person if I understand the way they think and vice versa. So definitely, I just want to let people know, go out there and talk to people. Don't be ashamed or embarrassed about it. Just do it.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that should be a place for that platform for it. But let me ask you this. Do you think the questions are a good thing? Right. I mean, when we start the journey, we mentioned that earlier, there's usually more questions. There's answers. There's not enough time to answer the questions. Are questions a good thing? Should we be asking questions?
as Gary said, I think, you know, ask at the appropriate time. I think, you know, if the instructor is demonstrating a move and there is something unclear about that move, I think that's a good time to ask a question. If it's something, well, what about if he does this? What about if he does this? What about if he does that? Then, you know, probably that's not necessarily a most productive, you know, question. You know, then basically you just wait. Usually the way I teach, usually by the end of the class, we will have gone through those iterations of what if he does this, what if he does that. But again, I think it's questions are good if they're, especially if they're asked, you know, at the appropriate time, meaning that, you know, what are we talking about at hand? Otherwise, you're basically hijacking the subject.
Well, and probably also, you know, the focus of the question is important too, right? Are we all talking about something very specific, or are we talking about what if, and we're just creating these scenarios and we derailing ourselves from the topic at hand? That happens often too, right? Like what if this guy jumps up and flies over and
what if he bites me? I've seen that one in class. What if he bites me?
Usually, I when that happens, I usually take the student and have him show me what he has in mind or she has in mind, and you know, it's usually resolved very quickly.
You know what? So I'm curious now, since you mentioned that, that's one of the strategies I learned some time ago, and even though the question is asked, I asked the student to show me what they mean by it, simply because I want to understand that my interpretation of the question is the same as theirs. Mm-hmm. So by showing the motions, it's much easier for me to understand. And as the result,
yeah, I that goes back to what them. I was saying is like once we actually start working together, things kind of unfold naturally, and you pick up on, you know, you answer your own questions a lot of times doing that.
Yeah, so. Exactly. I think, you know, especially a lot of times when they sort of show you the scenario, a lot of times, you know, the questions answer before you even start talking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that moment. That's like I call it jiu-jitsu epiphany. It's like, oh, yep, it's right here.
Did you still
answer your own question?
Yeah. Did you still want to go back to talking about developing your own game?
Oh yeah, you said remind me, and I don't know.
Yeah, I did touch on that again. I think it's important as you continue to go, you know, as you continue to get more experienced and go through the ranks, I think it's important to continually hone things that are ancillary to your game, but also continue to add in other things, because you don't know. First of all, if down the road, if you ever want to teach, you do want to have a pretty broad game. You don't want to be a one or two trick pony. You want to make sure that you can teach students pretty much anything. But also, I think sometimes people don't, you know, once we get a good at something, we don't want to kind of open ourselves up to something that we're not that good at. And you know, we're missing out on something that could be big for our game or big for, you know, for our students. So I think it's important that we continually try to add not just things that are tweaking off the stuff that is familiar, but also adding some new things.
Do you think jiu-jitsu is complex? Do you think it's difficult?
Yes, very, 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 very.
So we can't learn it like in a week?
No. I can almost pick these guys out. You know, it's like without a fail. I have a student and you could tell like how in love they're with jiu-jitsu the first 6 weeks. Like literally they want to be in every class. If they're not in the advanced program, they want to watch the advanced class. They're literally there every class for 6 weeks and then they're gone. And I could just almost see those wheels turning. And I tried to head it off at the pass, like, listen, pace yourself. This is a long distance race. Do not, you know, you're not going to absorb. And I think, I don't know what is going on through that head that somehow thinks that if I spend every waking moment here for 6 weeks, that it's going to make sense. It won't.
That must be hard.
It just won't. Yeah. Jiu-jitsu, I always tell people, guys, have I ever told any one of you that jiu-jitsu is easy? No. Jiu-jitsu is very hard. It is difficult. It makes us want to quit many times, but it is so good that you need to keep coming back until you kind of get to a point where you start to enjoy it a little bit more.
So let's tune in on that. What makes jiu-jitsu difficult?
Well, first of all, I think it's an art, which allows a lot of different interpretations. So that's first. That kind of, you know, jiu-jitsu can be taught and practiced in many different ways. Then you have the multitude of techniques that, you know, basically, you know, boxing is difficult to master, but it's, you know, it's a finite number of techniques that you just get better at. With jiu-jitsu, that number of techniques, it's, first of all, it's not finite. I think it's constantly evolving to the point where things that probably didn't exist 20, 30 years ago are existing now. But also that number of techniques is it's up there. You basically using your arms, you're using your head. Well, most of us using your you're using your head, you're using your legs, you know, it's you on top, you're on the bottom. There's just so many different things you could be doing. And I think evolution has kind of beaten out of us the ability to move sort of on the ground, on our backs, you know, after we're babies, and now you have to kind of reintroduce it and reestablish sort of that dexterity of your body to be able to sort of progress. And again, you know, as we just mentioned, it's not an instantaneous, no matter what you do in 6 weeks, you're still going to suck. And I don't mean that in a derogatory way. I mean, understand this is a process. It's just, you know, if you went into Harvard and basically sat there for, you know, if you could compress all the learning that you'd learn in whatever chosen subject for, you know, in a 3 month nonstop, you know, listen to it 16 hours a day for 3 months, you're still not going to absorb that knowledge.
Yeah. Some say, what is the saying? More you learn, less you know. It's like more time you spend on the mat, there's more questions and more mm-hmm. options, more of everything is so, yeah, I don't know.
Well, I think that it comes with like an open mind. If you have an open mind about jiu-jitsu, you'll realize fairly quickly in that you're never going to, hopefully you'll realize you're never going to master everything. And yeah, the more time you spend, the more opportunities you see and it just keeps growing and growing. I think it's a growth thing, not a finite thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And I think that's a very good point, because I think that's sort of the evolution. I think as a white belt, it just makes no sense. Maybe, you know, depending how athletic and, you know, what sports you played before, you know, in 9-12 months starts to make sense, and you get your blue belt and you start to, you know, and then you realize you don't know anything. Mm-hmm. And I think that's mm-hmm. that blue belt blues where a lot of people quit, is sort of like, they finally sort of made some progress only to realize how vast that subject of jiu-jitsu is. And it just becomes overwhelming where, oh, you know, they tapped to a white belt, you know, they somehow, you know, didn't count on this technique. I thought I knew this. And I think it just becomes overwhelming. I think it becomes, that's, I think, one of the reasons why a lot of blue belts quit is that, you know, the path from blue to purple to me is probably twice as long as from white to blue.
Not even long, but it's, I think, harder.
Yes.
Oh, more complex.
Yeah. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
And I think people need to manage, and the instructors need to manage the expectation. And I think if you're a blue belt, like not a brand new, because you're just happy you got the blue belt, but like a, you know, experienced blue belt, I think it's important for you to sort of start to almost talk yourself down and understand, like, yes, this is vast. It's going to be just one day at a time. Let me just go in. And if you try not to look at the vastness of the universe, you will be easily overwhelmed. And if you sort of look at it, okay, I'm going into class and, you know, I'm having trouble, you know, guard passing, and, you know, maybe in the role, you know, I almost managed to pass guard twice with this stuff they're working on. That's a good day for you.
The small things.
Yeah, it's always small victories, those little ones, you know.
Let's go back for a moment to the older guys one more time. One of the common questions that I often get, and especially for the guys, you know, over 40 who are starting, or maybe even not, maybe some of the experienced ones, you know, is what to do to really avoid some of the injuries that commonly. And I'm not talking about, you know, this guy smashed me and I got hurt. I'm more talking about the wear and tear that takes place on our body, you know, as we train, you know, over, you know, longer period of time. Where, you know, you've been on the mat for a long time now. There's a lot of wisdom. Share some of it with us.
Do as I say, not as I do. I think this it's actually an interesting phenomenon. I believe that, again, that flow rolling element of not necessarily, I think having a weekly schedule of training is a good thing. Because I think that guy that goes in, especially, again, let's take another one, 42-year-old guy. If he goes in and goes balls to the wall, and then 2 days later, if the next day he can't move, and then it's better, and then he goes train again. Every time he feels amazing, he's going to go balls to the wall, almost reckless. And I think that's where the chances for injury is much more common, is when you feel, I feel great. Because all the stuff that you happened to you 3 days ago has been cured, so to speak, by time. I think you're better off, at least in that respect. There's a couple of different things. There's overuse, which is a separate issue, but more sort of that those injuries, I think you're better off not training, not feeling like amazing, because you're going to go balls. That's for tournament. That's for tournaments. That's for fights. I think you're better off feeling, I've had some of my best training sessions when I was just beat up or maybe even hungover or something, where I just feel vulnerable and I'm just kind of protecting myself. And, you know, actually my game is better for that. I think training consistently, even if you don't quite feel like it, I think is an element of injury prevention to some extent.
Yeah,
because you're not going to feel amazing and you're going to be careful. I'm not saying that you should be going balls to the wall. You should probably be, that should be that day that you should be flow rolling or drilling with your training partner. Then there's overuse. I think overuse, especially, which we all subject to, I think stretching after. So dynamic stretching before and static stretching after is very important. I think a lot of times, we've had jiu-jitsu, people have a lot of back problems. I've had that since I was a kid before even jiu-jitsu. But, you know, just it's usually almost made worse by either hamstrings or IT bands. Stretching one or the other or both after training, literally if you invest 2 to 5 minutes of stretching, static stretching after training can really help. I'm a big fan of training in the water. It is an obscure thing. I'd love to figure out a way to make it better known, because I truly credit that for my game is at the level that it is today, both technically as well as being unbroken. I mean, you know, right now I'm still testing positive, so I can't train, but I've been training in my pool for the last 10 days, you know, so I'm training jiu-jitsu. I'm pretty sure when I hop on the mats, my game is going to be good, you know, versus just taking 2 weeks completely off, which I probably could use. But as I mentioned in my first point of this topic, I'm not a big fan of that. I think consistency in training, if you have injuries, try to, you know, it's a very simple concept. If you're doing something and it hurts, stop doing it. It's very simple. Do something else. If you can, you know, like with lower back problems, that's a major issue, because if you can't move, that's a problem. But if you can move, you can do things. So try to focus on things you could do. You know, again, don't try to force things that are painful, because if they're painful, your body's telling you, make it worse.
Yeah. And there's one more point of that consistency and balls to the wall that you talked about moments ago is, that often, at least in my mind, introduces the inconsistency of training. What I mean by this, we go balls to the wall, we can't move next day, then following day, we still recovering, then a third day, we just don't feel like it. And now, then 4 or 5 days passes by and we haven't been on the mat. Mm-hmm. And then we go back and we feel awesome and we go balls to the wall again. The wall. And then again, that same cycle continues.
Yeah. It becomes a vicious cycle.
Right. Versus doing a little bit, right? Consistent training. So 2, 3, 4 times a week, whatever your schedule allows, whatever your goal is, but consistently. And that consistency really continues stimulating our minds, is continue moving our bodies, which is what you talked about, is preparing us as a pre-injury prevention, essentially, because we continuously moving, we continuously exercising, and there's that. And plus, our minds are getting continually educating themselves, or we are educating ourselves as far as the jiu-jitsu is concerned. So no matter how appealing this balls-to-the-wall concept is, I don't know. I really would recommend staying away from it.
Yeah, don't get me wrong. I do love going balls-to-the-wall every so often. You know, that's the ultimate test of technique. But, you know, they literally, like, you know, you want to do that no more than 2 or 3 times a week max, you know, and that's.
And believe me, I'm with you. I love training hard. Gary can tell you. I love training hard. But I just know after, you know, in my 40s, like, I just can't do that. I can't do that every day. Maybe some others can, but I just can't do it every day. I would rather be on the mat every single day than go once hard and then not be on a mat for the next 4 days. Yeah. It just doesn't make any sense in my mind. And I mean, you guys can feel free to jump in. And
I agree. I think it's, you know, if you're a white belt, you know, you need to get your body ready, and, you know, maybe you're training 3 days a week, but once you become purple belt and above, and you should be training 5, 6, 7 days a week. And, you know, if I go hard and fast, you know, I love training like with Nicky Rod at Henzo's, and basically it was like a seal with a ball. I was the ball, and basically Nicky Rod would throw me around, and basically as I'm flying around, I'm trying to get a good grip on the head or the arm. And, you know, but if you're going to do that, then you better make sure that the next day you're training, maybe not at the same level, but you're training. Because if you can, eventually you got, like, it becomes that vicious cycle. Like you said, it's just you training only the days you feel great. And, you know, eventually those days going to be very few, far in between. I think it's important for people to have a weekly training regimen. You can go off it. I've gone off it, like, where, you know, at Henzo's, I'd be training with somebody and I'm looking over, there's a guy from, he's visiting the academy, sitting on the bench. And I tell the guy that I'm with, I said, watch, he's going to ask me, train with him next.
Of course. Why wouldn't he?
Let's go light.
Let's go light. Right. This is all how it starts, right? Let's go light.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, it's you have to do that. Sometimes, you know, okay, that was going to be my easy day, but it's not. You know, sometimes you go off that training schedule, but it needs to be a weekly training regimen where basically, okay, I will train every Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, whatever it is for you, depending on your life situation and your goals and so forth, and your level of jiu-jitsu. You know, this is what I'm doing every week.
Well, and you mentioned something really important. The training sessions, each time, they don't have to be the same. One time we can go hard. The other time we focus on drilling. There's a flow rolling. Then maybe we do a private lesson. Then maybe we educate ourselves off the mat as far as videos, or we study, or we analyze, we take notes, we read our notes, whatever the case, all that is part of training. There's a big umbrella of training. And I feel like often when we mention training, some of the students in the beginning of the journey, their interpretation is, I need to be on the mat going balls out. Yeah. Every single time. And that is not how I would consider setting myself for success.
I don't think there's longevity in that. Even if you're young, there's no longevity in that.
No longevity. And I believe ultimately the skill level is going to be stunted effectively. I know guys that have been blue belts for 10, 12 years. And basically that's the attitude they've had, you know?
Yeah.
They believe that it's old school. Well, you know, maybe there's reason why we're not driving Model T anymore.
Yeah. I like it. Listen, if it's 52 all to start?
No.
Cool. I got in right under the wire.
Oh, what a great conversation. Listen, before we wrap this up, we've been doing this for an hour, over an hour. Before we wrap this up, we have five quick questions from you. One of them is from one of our listeners. Gary will take a lead on this. And some of them are funny. Some of them are, you know, a little more serious. But we didn't tell you about this. This is a surprise. So see what comes to your mind, and we'll put you on a spot here.
Yeah, I know you studied striking arts before jiu-jitsu. But what was it like the first time you stepped on the mats, on the jiu-jitsu mats?
Well, there's actually, I didn't step on jiu-jitsu mats. This is probably back in 1991. The Gracies, and I say the Gracies because, you know, sometimes people generalize, but back at that time, they did a massive seminar. Back then, the seminars were like a weekend-long event. They did it at a Sheraton Tower Hotel in Parsippany. It was on the carpet. And it was massive. I mean, there were people, you know, there was probably 10, 12 adults. I remember Hickson was there. Hoyler was there. Pelia was there. Horian was there. And then they brought a bunch of kids. And at the end is basically, and I remember, after each day, they would roll with the people on the carpet. I remember Hoyce at that time got on my back and just put the hooks in right in my mats. And basically at that point in time, I would have tapped on either one, the choke or the, but I do remember that, you know, you feel helpless, and I did not want to have that feeling. And I really wanted to, at that time, my mentality first few years, and I didn't, you know, basically the next year I took the next seminar they did, and only 93 became available in this part of the East Coast. My mentality at that time was to just learn a little bit just in case if I get on the ground. And over a 3-5 year period, I've started to realize how intricate and technical and involved it was, and I needed to have it. I'm still after it.
Still working on it?
Still working on it.
Have you ever wanted to quit?
Oh, yeah.
Like for serious or like a bad day and you're like, but then the next day you talk yourself out of it? Or was there times where you were like,
I never quit. I just don't, but I don't know why. I do remember, you know, when I was, so I was one of the first blue belts on the East Coast, but you know, this is even before Henzo started teaching and moved to the East Coast. But at that time it was kind of the accepted, and again, the accepted sort of way to pass guard was tight passing. You look at me, you know, I walk around 160 pounds and scrawny neck, and basically it was not for me. And I just remember one time, for example, I was working in corporate America, and I would come in into, you know, I would get up 5:30, 5 o'clock and go to the city and train from, you know, 7 o'clock to 8:15, take a shower and run to the office. But, you know, a guy that at the time I would get the better of, and he would sort of do pretty well with John, who was at the blue belt at the time. And John would just, I just remember that, like, I was trying to tight guard pass him, and he choked me out 6 times in a row. And I was just so frustrated until, you know, literally this lasted for a year and a half of me, where I was just trying, and now the guy knew what I was doing. And no matter how, what adjustments I made, it would just be the same result over and over and over. And I would just, and then one day I just stood up and he cut pass, and eureka, my year and a half long slump was over. But I gotta be honest with you, it was extremely, extremely, extremely frustrating. You know, people will hit slumps. That's a natural part of progression of jiu-jitsu. They're especially more prevalent and longer in the early stages, but you will still get them throughout your path. But I don't know why I didn't quit, because it's
a year and a half plateau is pretty, that's a big one. That's a big one. Yeah. All right. The next question is from a listener. It's from Francisco. And we've touched on this a little bit, but what advice do you have for people who are starting later in life, and for white belts? It's kind of a two-parter.
If you're starting out, make sure you go to a good school. Walk into an academy, even if you don't know anything, just walk in and feel the atmosphere. If you kind of like the atmosphere, and it's very easy. I'm sure you've gone to a restaurant where it was like literally you walked in and you walked out. There was something off. And a lot of schools will project that vibe as well, especially probably more so because you're sort of at a heightened sense of sort of like, okay, I'm getting into something new, uncomfortable. So go to a good academy, which has a good atmosphere. That's as important as a good teacher. One of the biggest aspects of jiu-jitsu is the social aspect. I think it's, I respect, and I think this is the thing that binds us together, is that years and decades long struggle, which we appreciate other people that go through it with us, and find good training partners, people that have, you know, they all have tread that path, know how difficult it is, and they will try to make it easier for you and hopefully help you in your path and, you know, help you out. So if you go in, you know, take a trial class, you have people helping you out, like, yeah, listen, just, you know, one of the most important thing in the early days is just be comfortable being uncomfortable. That's literally it. Just, you know, if you can be there for 3 minutes with a guy on top, you may not be able to get out, but just the fact that you sucked it up and you kind of didn't freak out and didn't start to hyperventilate, that's, you know, you've learned something, you've picked up something. So then trust the process. Understand that this is an intricate martial art. It is a beautiful thing. You will meet a lot of wonderful people through it. In a few years, you're going to be thankful that you did this. But for the first 6 months, 9 months, whatever it is, just pace yourself. Pace yourself. Set a schedule. Maybe start out, you know, 2 to 3 times a week, and then over time, maybe add another day or so. So again, pace yourself. Nobody, you know, you know, when you learn to swim, although I did learn to swim like that, you're not necessarily thrown in the deep end. If you're thrown into a deep end, it's not a good place for you. You should probably make sure that you are sort of in a place that allows you to, you know, get your jiu-jitsu legs, so to speak, and, you know, start walking. Appreciate every day that you've learned something. If you're having a rough day, try to think about things that you learned that day that made your game better or may make it better. Maybe you didn't quite master it. And I understand there are things that I'm working on now that I've been working on for years, mm-hmm. some decades. Right. So it's a never ending process. You know, watch a Japanese show on green tea ceremony, where it's a relatively simple thing where people spend their life perfecting that, and think about how much more complex this is.
That's great. Fantastic advice. Describe your feelings when you received your black belt.
You know, it's almost, it's weird. It's almost like a downer. It's almost like a anticlimactic.
Mm-hmm. Why?
Because you spent so much time sort of looking for that thing, and now you have it and nothing's changed. Does that make sense?
I think so.
So
yeah.
I think John has said it many times that, you know, bulk of your jiu-jitsu life on the mats is spent after black belt. So it's just a recognition, you know, I'm a fan of, you know, of the belt system, because it provides a validation of that. Somebody else's eyes have recognized that you've made progress. It's just another mile marker. You know, it's just one of those things. And I showed up the next day and
there was
trained as hard as they've not even, you know, okay, now I really got to get good at this thing.
All right. And then speaking of belts, do you wash your belt?
Sometimes.
Yeah, listen,
it's just, you know, Henzo just addressed this issue about tying your belt.
Yeah,
it's like whatever, you know, as you slap it on and whichever side it comes out, it's the same thing with washing. You know, I don't wash it necessarily, you know, because it's black, so I don't want to wash it with white geese. But when I wash dark geese and no gi, I'll wash it with it. But, you know, if you think about it, if you, especially, you know, some belts you have for a few years, you know, just to collect all the sweat and the cooties, and this even before COVID, you know, just don't worry about it. It does not have magic.
No, you cannot wash your knowledge away.
No.
I don't remember who said it, but they want it. Sometimes you want to wash the bad days away. Like you just got to get rid of all of it. But I think you're fine.
What a phenomenal conversation. Listen, this conversation was full of gold.
Yeah, golden nuggets. People are going to be happy.
There's a lot of good information here. Thanks for sharing all this with us.
It was my pleasure.
Where can listeners find you? So first of all, let's talk about your YouTube thing for a second. Where exactly it is, what time, you know, short of Lassen this week, maybe, what's your schedule on that?
Every Friday, 10:30 a.m. Eastern time.
And where can find you?
Everything is easy. Everything you can find are your Silver Fox BJJ. Everything. YouTube channel, website. If you are interested in any of my BJJ Fanatics DVDs, I just shot a fourth one. You just go on their website and put in Silver Fox or Fox is enough. But Silver Fox BJJ, everything is easy to find.
Simple. We love it.
Good stuff.
All right. Well, shall we wrap this up?
All right, let's do it. Thank you so much for doing this with us. We really appreciate it. And I, like Thomas said, I think our listeners are going to have a wealth of knowledge, great stuff to choose from. So thank
you. Let me know if you are ever in Chicago area. If so, I would love to have you.
Oh, absolutely. I would love to do that. I plan on it. And thank you guys. I had an amazing time. It's a lot of fun for me.
Cool. All right. Peace.
We'll talk to you soon.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Raw Radio. If you enjoyed the show, don't forget to leave us a review and help us make the show even more amazing. For future episodes, check out our website and follow us on all major podcast platforms. Take care.